This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher. It's about news, information, ideas, and tips for living life over 55. First, 60 seconds of Do You Remember?
I have asked for this radio and television time tonight for the purpose of announcing that we today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam.
That is the 37th President of the United States, Richard M. Nixon, who served from 1969 to 1974. Although he initially escalated America's involvement in the Vietnam War, he subsequently ended U.S. involvement in 1973. Well, hi, everyone. Well, here's a quote to remember. Baby boomers have regularly been catalysts for social change, and getting divorced in their later years appears to be one of the most recent trends. Well, that pronouncement is from the president of the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, and a 2013 survey of the nation's top divorce attorneys reports that there's an increase in the number of divorce cases among couples over 50. Well, that being the case, and we don't wish divorce on anyone, but knowing a thing or two might help you or someone you know facing that prospect. So we talked with a prominent family law attorney about the so-called gray divorce. He is Mark Baer, a prominent family law attorney, as we say, and mediation expert. Mark has some advice and some opinions formed over the many years of working with divorcing couples. Well, hi, Mark, and thanks for joining us in your long career in this line of work. What have you found that really jumps out at you?
Spouses who are divorcing, they may have opposite views. They may be upset with each other, but if they are taken into the litigation arena, if you look up the definition of an adversary in the dictionary, an adversary means enemy, and I'm not so sure that everyone who has a disagreement or is angry with someone else is an enemy. And so I'm not inclined to try to throw people into litigation when they're divorcing. And I work in negotiation, mediation, and collaborative practice with regard to family law matters.
So what are you seeing in the baby boomer market in that regard?
Well, there's certainly been an increase in divorce with baby boomers, and there's been quite a bit written about what people refer to as the gray divorce.
So gray divorce or not, it sounds like what you're saying is that you really try to keep all of the hostilities and the anger as much as possible out of the divorce process.
Well, I don't believe that people should start this process as enemies. I don't think, based on my 23 years of practice, I don't believe that people who are divorcing are generally enemies. There might be different levels of conflict. There might be different levels of distrust. But the reality is that if you are going to be adversaries, and that's litigating this divorce case, then you need to understand that litigation is an adversarial process, and nobody plays an adversarial game to lose. So if you have two sporting teams or boxers or card game or whatever it is that's adversarial, or even a war, nobody plays it to lose or tie. And when two people are involved in an adversarial process to win, and they are parents of children, I don't care if the children are 50 years old now, you destroy the family because you have now turned this from whatever level of conflict it is, you are going to most definitely escalate that conflict. And it has been found time and time again that the adversarial process, regardless of whether it's family law or anything else, tends to breed paranoia. So whatever the level of distrust there was before, you are only going to make it worse. So I really think that that should be the last way that you try to resolve a family law matter, and that you first try to work in some constructive manner, such as through mediation or a collaborative divorce process. And I don't think that a lot of people consider such things or know about these options before they start, or think that they fit into those kind of processes. And the fact of the matter is that mediation is considered to be a conflict resolution mechanism. I use that term loosely because I don't know that you can resolve conflict, but you can manage it. And if the whole point of the process is to lower conflict and reestablish trust, then you are able to take whatever the issues are, and you're able to calm down the level of conflict, which is then interfering in people's judgment, among other things, rebuild trust, and help the people to reach an agreement. And a collaborative process is similar, but it's an interdisciplinary process with mental health professionals working in coaching people through their emotions, and the lawyers are working with the legal end and the and for instance, a financial neutral, like a CPA, for example, would be involved in dealing with financial issues. And it's sort of like, I would say, economies of scale, if anybody knows what that term means. It's an economic term. Economies of scale by specialization of labor. So economies of scale are sort of like, for instance, if you're one family living in a house together and sharing common expenses, you're going to spend less money to support that same family than if you're no longer sharing common expenses. In fact, it's been found that your expenses total for the family go up by approximately 34% by virtue of losing the economy of scale that you have from shared expenses, because there are two homes and other such things. So the reality is nobody's getting to keep their standard of living that they had before unless somehow there was 34% on average being kept in savings. And the same economy of scale works when if you do it right and you're not duplicating efforts and you have specialization of labor and you're farming out the different aspects of the case to professionals that are more appropriately suited for handling things. A mental health professional, we're all dealing with the emotional stuff. Mental health professionals are the people who are most trained for dealing with that and helping people to calm down their emotions. Lawyers aren't. And the mental health professionals are tremendously less expensive. And there was nothing in law school where we were taught anything relating to finance or math. So we decided to go into family law, but where was the training for that? My undergraduate was in economics business. I can say that most lawyers, that's not so. So if you're bringing in an accountant, for example, to be the financial, their rate is generally lower than the lawyers, too. And that's their specialty, dealing with numbers. So there are different approaches for handling it, and I think it's a lot of times people set themselves up for failure, and they say, well, you know, I can't do mediation or collaborative because I'm in conflict or I don't trust, and that's inconsistent with the whole premise of a conflict resolution process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it does, and divorce is not an easy topic as much as someone, as a couple, just want to get out of the relationship, but it's just not that simple. And
the other thing that is really important, and I think that people seem to miss the boat on it, is it's true that children are resilient, but up to a point, and depending upon what we're talking about, if parents are going to badmouth each other, if parents can't be in the same room with each other now because of what transpired in their divorce, they're not going to be able to be in the same room with each other in 10 years. And what people don't seem to realize is that we see this kind of stuff where people, you know, there's issues with regard to the children when they have some special event, like a wedding. There was a case recently that I heard about where it was a Jewish family, and the parents had to have, they agreed to have two bar mitzvahs for their child that was turning 13. And, you know, those people who don't understand exactly what a bar mitzvah is, after you become 13 and have it, you become a bar mitzvah, which means you can't have two bar mitzvahs. You can't become something twice. So, you know, it was just ridiculous that these parents couldn't sit down and figure out how to put together a bar mitzvah for their child, for one thing. And the child has to, for instance, at 13, go in front of a whole, you know, in front of the temple full of people and basically lead the service in Hebrew, among other things. And it's really stressful for a 13-year-old. And they're going to make them do it twice because they can't be, you know, they can't agree on how to work together. And it doesn't end there, because the same thing happens when each child graduates from any given school. That's the child's day. Parents are going to have separate parties for those kids afterwards because they can't remember it's the child's day. Or what happens when the children get married? Or what happens when the children get married, have families of their own, move into their first house, and want to have Thanksgiving at their house? What happens if they want the grandparents, which are the two parents that divorced, there? And now they can't, because those people can't be in the same room because of what they did before. It passes down from generation to generation. And the other thing is that, let's say, for instance, that it isn't at that point, but let's say you have an adult child even, who the parents live geographically close enough that for Thanksgiving the child's going to split early Thanksgiving with dad and later Thanksgiving the same day with mom. I can tell you what happens. The mom is going to start, it doesn't matter which one has second. First of all, they're going to fight over who goes first and second. And then when the child is starting to arrive at the first one, they're going to start receiving phone calls, text messages, and emails from the second one saying, "When are you getting here?" And they haven't even gotten to the first one. And that harassment is going to go on for the whole time they're at the first one. And so let me be real clear. This divorce does impact children, and it impacts them forever, and it impacts the grandchildren. And so it really is, parents need to be bigger than their problems.
Maybe what I'm hearing you say is, don't get divorced or don't get married, but do one or the other.
Oh, no, I'm by no means saying that. I don't think that there's, ideally people want to remain married, and I'm not in favor of staying married for the sake of staying married if you're unhappy. You have one time on this planet, and if it's that bad and you can't, and you've grown apart and can't fix it, then why be, you know, miserable? But I don't think that the divorces need to be handled the way that they've been handled now for decades, because we know how it turns out. And you know, you can get in a lawsuit with anybody. And I can tell you what happens, because I've been there before, where there's some sort of a party and they have seating arrangements. And two people who were involved on opposite ends of a lawsuit, and it wasn't family law, are put at the same table because the host doesn't know. And I can promise you that there's going to be complaints to the host about having to move. And possibly one of them or both of them will leave the party, and that's not even a divorce with those kind of emotional issues. So this is the kind of thing that happens if you want to play the divorce game the same way that we play every other type of litigation. And I just think that it's just the wrong approach. There are constructive ways of doing things, and I don't think that litigation is constructive. I think it's a way of resolving a dispute, but it causes a lot of other collateral damage as that's being done. And there are other ways of resolving conflicts and disputes.
So, Mark, as we wind down our time here, what might be some final bit of advice for baby boomers who are thinking of going down the route of divorce court?
I would say that one of the problems that we're seeing is that people don't have as much money saved as they think they have, or they thought they would have, or they will need, because people are living longer. And so, really seriously, the more conflict you guys create, the more money you spend, the more distrust you create, the more money you spend. And when you think about what the issues are that we deal with in family law, we're dealing with parenting plans and timeshare arrangements if the children are minors. We're dealing with child support if the children are minors. We're dealing with spousal support. We're dealing with division of property, and we're dealing with allocation of attorney's fees between the two spouses, and those are the issues that we're dealing with, possibly domestic violence restraining orders. Those are the issues. Now let's talk about the issues that cause marriages to fail. Communication issues, some financial issues. Maybe somebody's been out of work and the other spouse thinks that they're lazy. Maybe somebody overspent. Maybe somebody got them into terrible financial condition. Maybe somebody's been disrespectful, verbally or abusive or physically abusive or something of this nature. These are the kinds of things. Maybe there's been infidelity, and usually there's been things that led up to the infidelity, and the marriage already started to turn. These are the things that go on that cause a marriage to fail. Are any of those things, other than the domestic violence, related to the issues that we deal with in a divorce case? They aren't. So it's all emotional stuff, and I'm not suggesting that it be ignored, but I am suggesting that it is not legally relevant. And it, those things that cause the marriage to fail, those things are the fuel that's powering the locomotive that is carrying the train, the litigation train. And they are irrelevant as far as the law is concerned. And therefore, people are allowing these legally irrelevant things, with the exception of domestic violence, they are allowing these legally irrelevant things to cost them a huge amount of money that they can't get back, when they already probably don't have enough money saved to live out their lives because we're living longer. And it just is a terrible waste to spend unnecessary money on lawyers because you're exacerbating the conflict and increasing the distrust over issues that are not legally relevant. And that's why I say there are better ways of resolving this thing.
And you've already indicated those. And well, you have a very powerful message, Mark, and I appreciate the time and sharing that with us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. And finally, we would love it if you'd register to receive our newsletter. Thanks again.